Okay, now what we're going to be learning is the laws of Amira L'Nachri, which are so important for all of us to know because Amira L'Nachri is something that I think people violate every single Shabbos, not because they want to violate, but because simply they just don't know what the rules are and what perhaps they are not. So what does Amira L'Nachri actually mean? Amira L'Nachri means you are not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do activities for you on Shabbos that you yourself would not be allowed to do. This is discussed in Maseches Shabbos Daf Yutes. Maseches Shabbos Daf Kuf Chav Beis Daf Kuf Nun Aleph. It's in Erev and Daf Samach Zayin. It's in Beitza Daf Chav Dalet Moed Katan Daf Yud Beis. And in Avodah Zarah Daf Chav Aleph and Chav Beis. And it's in Shulchan Aruch all throughout, scattered throughout. Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Shabbos Reish Mem Gimel Reish Mem Dalet Reish Mem Hey Reish Mem Vav Reish Mem Zayin Reish Nun Beis. So Amira L'Nachri, I only gave you a few examples, but Amira L'Nachri is something that comes up all over the place, and it is something that we need to be aware of. And whenever we talk about any topic in halacha, the first question we need to ask ourselves is, are we dealing with something that is a prohibition on a level of de'oraisa? Is this a biblical prohibition, or is this only something which is rabbinic? Is it only midrabbanan? Of course, if something is only midrabbanan, we have a lot more leeway. I'm not saying that a din derabbanan, that a rabbinic decree, is not so important, but it's obviously not on the same level as a din de'oraisa. So that's the first question that we need to ask ourselves all the time. And especially when we deal with Amira L'Nachri, that is the first question we need to ask. So we look at the Pasuk in Sefer Shmos, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Tazayin, where the Torah says, Vayom HaRishon Mikra Kodesh, Uvayom HaShvi Mikra Kodesh Yelachem. We are told that we are going to celebrate Pesach. On the first day is considered to be a Yom Tov. On the seventh day is also considered to be a Yom Tov. Of course, here in Chutz Laaretz, it's not only the first day, it's the first and second, and then the seventh and the eighth, because of what we refer to as a Sveka Diyoma, which means we're not sure exactly which day is the proper day on the calendar, so that's why we do it both days. Either way, that's not relevant to our conversation. What is relevant is the next words. What are you supposed to do on the first day, and what are you supposed to do on the seventh day? Kol melacha lo ye'aseh bahem. One is not allowed to have melacha that is done on them. Now, what does it mean, lo ye'aseh bahem? What does it mean you're not allowed to have melacha that is done? We know that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you are not allowed to do malacha. So what does it mean, malacha is not allowed to be done on them? Isn't that already included when it says, lo sasu kal malacha? So this is a question that is asked by the Mechilta. Mechilta is the Medrash on Sefer Shmos that wonders, what does it mean, kal malacha lo ye'aseh bahem? We already told you explicitly that, lo sasu kal malacha. And the Medrash raises the possibility that maybe it means, kal malacha lo ye'aseh bahem, is of the understanding that you're not even allowed to have other people doing malacha from you. Now, what does that mean, other people? Anyone who lives in my house is instructed on their own not to do malacha, correct? So what does it mean, other people? And from here, the Medrash says, maybe it means that if you have a non-Jew who is not included in the prohibition of doing malacha on Shabbos, maybe the Torah here is saying that they are not allowed to do malacha on your behalf on Shabbos. Maybe that is what it means. That is the question that the Mechilta deals with in trying to understand this pasuk. Rashi on Chumash quotes that Mechilta, and he says, when the Torah says, lo ye'aseh bahem, it means, afilu al yedei acherim, that even via other people. Now, what kind of acherim are we talking about? Rashi understands it to mean, even a non-Jew is not allowed to do malacha for you on Shabbos. Along comes the Ramban on Chumash, and he says, how can that be? I'll take your question in a second. Look at number Beis here. Says the Ramban on Chumash, Perakid Beis, pasuk Tezayin. What do you mean, Pirush Rashi afila ide acherim, below avinosize? Says the Ramban, what is Rashi talking about? Rashi on Chumash gives an interpretation to the psukim, which is the biblical understanding of what the Torah is trying to convey to us. How can Rashi say that these words, kol malacha lo ye'aseh bahem, is referring to a non-Jew doing malacha for us, if after all, this is only an iser midrabanan? This is a rabbinic prohibition for a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos. So here, says the Ramban, lo havinosize, I don't understand Rashi. Shem acherim ha'elu Yisrael. If these other people who are doing malacha are Jews, heim atzma muzhar malea. They themselves are not allowed to do malacha because the Torah says, lo sasaka malacha. And if I am tricking them into doing malacha without telling them, then that is a prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitin michshol. So what am I talking about? Rashi means to say that the Torah's intention here in these words is that I'm not allowed to have a non-Jew do malacha for me? How can that be? After all, we know the Gemara says that this is only a din derabbanan. This is only a rabbinic prohibition to do malacha on Shabbos. Along comes the Rambam, and the Rambam explains. Look here in the beginning of the sixth parak in Hilchos Shabbos. This is number Gimel on the sheet, where the Rambam tells us what his opinion is. Asur lomar legoy lasos lana malacha b'Shabbos. We are not allowed to have a non-Jew do activity for us on Shabbos. Afal pi she'ena mitzuva ala Shabbos. Even though a non-Jew, of course, is not obligated to keep Shabbos. Afal pi she'amar lo mikodem haShabbos. Says the Rambam, even if I give him the instruction before Shabbos begins, still, he is not allowed to do it on Shabbos. Afal pi she'ena tzarach lo'osa malacha ala la'achar haShabbos. And even if I give him the instruction before Shabbos, and I don't need it on Shabbos itself, I'm not allowed to give him the instruction to do it on Shabbos. V'davar zeh asur midivrei sofrim. Says the Rambam, this is only midirabanan. And that is the opinion of most of the Rishonim, where we assume that the prohibition on Shabbos is only midirabanan. If you look here in the Shaar HaTzion is actually the comments of the Mishnah Berurah on the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shaar HaTzion writes that Mikala poskim mashma shehu rak midirabanan. All of the poskim agree that Amira the Nachri is only a rabbinic prohibition. It is only midirabanan, and we are not talking about a din de oraisa. So, for starters, we're talking about something that is not on the level of a de oraisa. It's only on a level of dirabanan. Again, a very serious prohibition, something that we need to really think about very carefully and make sure that we don't violate. Maybe it's what we refer to as an asmachta, which means there is some kind of hint in a pasuk to this idea when it says lo ye'asa kal malacha, but it does not mean that it is a din d'oraisa. What I mean when I say that we have to take it very seriously is the following. Go away from Hilchos Shabbos for a moment. Let's just give an example from outside of Hilchos Shabbos, and then we'll translate it back into here. The Ramah gives us guidelines of how much money a person would be obligated to spend to fulfill any given mitzvah. We'll get to your questions in a second, okay? So how much money would somebody have to be willing to spend in order to fulfill a mitzvah? Say, for example, it's coming up to the Yom Tov of Pesach. Matzahs are very expensive. How much money do I need to spend to have matzah on Leil HaSeder? What do I have to be expected to spend? Let's say I'm very poor and I really don't have a lot of money. So what am I supposed to do? So the Ramah gives guidelines and he says, in order to fulfill a mitzvah, I have to be willing to give ad chomesh nechasav, up to 1/5 of my assets, I have to be willing to give in order to fulfill a mitzvah. What about in order not to violate an avera? Let's say, for example, I have an opportunity to pay someone off in order for myself not to violate an avera. How much would I have to pay for that? How much would I have to pay? Says the Rama, kol hon beso. You would have an obligation to give up all the money that you have instead of violating an avera. So say, for example, I have in front of me non-kosher food, but I can pay $1 million for a kosher sandwich. Unrealistic case, but let's just say for argument's sake. So how much money would I have to give up in order not to violate the Isser of Kashrus? The answer is kol hon beso. Now, what about what I'm talking about in the Isser Durabana? Kashrus is something which is da'oraisa, correct? What about if I'm talking about an Isser D'Rabbanan? How much money would I have to spend not to violate an Isser D'Rabbanan? Along comes the Vilna Gaon and he says, you look in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos and you have your answer. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, Kufchaf Aleph Amad Aleph, the Gemara has the following case. Let's say somebody's house is going up in flames on Shabbos. And we're talking about also an unrealistic case where nobody's lives are in danger, where it's impossible for the fire to spread anywhere else. Let's just say there are firefighters all around it, and it's not, whatever the case you're going to come up with, live on a desert island. So the Gemara wants to know, would I be allowed to tell a non-Jew to put the fire out in order to save my property, to save my house? What's the answer? No, you're not allowed to. But what do you mean? This is my house. This is all my money. This is everything I have. Says the Vilna Gaon, you're not allowed to do that. That's what the Mishnah says. But what prohibition would I violate if I told a non-Jew to put it out for me? What? Amir l'akum. All I'm doing is an issur d'rabbanan. All I'm violating is a rabbinic prohibition asking a non-Jew to do a malacha for me on Shabbos. That is not even biblical. And yet, the Gemara says explicitly that I'm not allowed to ask the non-Jew to put it out for me, even though at worst what I'm going to violate is an issur d'rabbanan, says the Vilna Gaon. That means you need to take issurim d'rabbanan very seriously as well. And that is something that we all need to think about. Amir al-Nakhri, as I mentioned, is something that people are really not so careful about. And we need to really be aware of what Amir Lenachri actually means and what the parameters are of this prohibition. But it's mentioned in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos and Erevin and Gittin and Baba Kama, Baba Metzia. The Gemara talks about Amir Lenachri in a number of different contexts, and the Gemara seems to be very clear that Amir Lenachri is only a rabbinic prohibition. Okay, now because it's a rabbinic prohibition, there are many leniencies along the way that we're going to have to talk about. Of course, we're not going to be able to cover all of them today, but we're going to just begin by giving a little bit of an overview or introduction to the whole prohibition of Amir Lenachri, and we'll continue in the next one or two shiurim. Yes, question.
Aren't we allowed to, on Shabbos, if you need something, like, I guess, like, lower a fire or something like that, you're allowed to, like, hint?
All right, so we're going to get to all of that. We're going to get to that as we get further into the subject.
Okay.
Yes, question. Bless you. What does he mean?
Yeah, like if it's not giving us the mitzvah of Amir.
Yes, so the Ramban has a fantastic chiddush where he says if you have a ger toshav, which again is a complicated story, but the Ramban says he thinks that's what it might be referring to, that you're not allowed to ask a ger toshav to do malacha for you on Shabbos. That would be an iser of Amir la'akum midah raisa. But okay, that's not. Okay, so second question we need to ask ourselves. If we have established that this is in fact an iser midah rabbanan and is only rabbinic, you always need to have a reason why the Chachamim, why the rabbis decided that something should be prohibited. They weren't allowed to just wake up one day and say, you know what, we don't want anybody doing this. They have to give a reason. They have to explain the rationale for giving whatever instructions they gave. They can't just make up new ideas. So the question that all the Rishonim deal with is, what was the impetus? What was the reason behind this prohibition of Amir Lenachri? If you look in the Rishonim, you will find a number of reasons. Number one, Rashi says in Masechta Shabbos, Kufchaf Aleph, Rashi tells us as follows. The reason why there's a prohibition of Amir Lenachri is because we have an institution in Halacha called Shlichus. Shlichus means, if I am unable to do something, I'm allowed to have a proxy in my place, do it on my behalf. The strange example that the Gemara gives about Shlichus is something that I hope will never happen in any of your lifetimes, which is, you have a husband and wife who want to get married, and for whatever logistical reason, the husband and wife are not able to be together in the same state at the time when they want to get married, so the husband sends a shliach, he sends a messenger on his behalf, and he says, you know what, go onto the chuppah, and go to the kala, and give her a ring on my behalf, and say, Hare at mekudeshes, not li, don't you dare steal my wife, but make sure you say, Hare at mekudeshes to my friend, who happens to have gotten stuck in traffic, and is unable to be here tonight, we're so sorry, but he loves you anyway, and he wants to be married, and he's afraid that somebody else is going to marry you in his place, and therefore he sent me as his trusted shliach to be the one to give you the ring and to accept him in marriage. That is the case of shlichus that the Gemara gives. The Gemara also talks about a case of shlichus in the opposite direction, if God forbid one has to get divorced. So let's say you have a situation where the husband and wife had such an acrimonious marriage and they're so bitter at each other, they don't want to look at each other anymore. So would we be able to send a divorce document al yedei shliach? Can we send a get through a messenger that will stand in the place of the husband or the wife? A shliach lekabbalah or a shliach leholacha, which means either the husband sends a shliach to give it on his behalf or the wife sends a shliach to accept it on her behalf. That's a big discussion in the Gemara. But we have an institution of shlichus. And this is something that the Gemara talks about extensively, exactly how the dynamics work, and when does shlichus actually apply, and when do we say that it's out of the parameters of shlichus, whatever it is. But we do have such a concept, and therefore, says the Rashi, that's why Chazal felt it was important to make an institution of Amir Lenachri on Shabbos, because if I'm not allowed to do something on Shabbos, then it means I'm not allowed to send a messenger to do it in my place either. The same way we find that a messenger can stand in my place and do all kinds of other things, he can get married on my behalf, he can get divorced on my behalf, he can do all kinds of other things that the halacha expects me to do. So too, if I have a non-Jew who does malacha for me on Shabbos, it is considered like an extension of my own hand. And therefore, you are not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malacha. That is the opinion of Rashi in Maseches Shabbos. Rashi in Maseches Avodah Zarah gives us a different reason. In Avodah Zarah Daf Tezvav, Rashi says the reason for the prohibition of Amir Lenachri is because we have a pasuk in the Navi Yeshaya where it says, Mimso cheftzecha v'daber davar. There are certain ways in which you're supposed to speak on Shabbos, certain things that you're not supposed to talk about on Shabbos. And therefore, he says, if you're going to be talking about malacha on Shabbos, if you're going to be instructing a non-Jew to do all kinds of activities, that is speech that is prohibited on Shabbos. And therefore, says Rashi, that is the reason why the Chachamim came up with this prohibition of Amira L'Nachri, because they were concerned it's going to lead a person to talk about things that they otherwise should not be talking about on Shabbos. What would be a practical difference between these two reasons of Rashi? Again, reason number one is because Nasa Keshlucho, it's because you are my messenger. Reason number two is because we don't want you talking about things that you shouldn't speak about on Shabbos. What would be an afkamina? Yeah? Right, but what would be a practical difference? Give me a case where it would be a difference. Yeah?
Like the malacha would be done from the first case. Like
the malacha.
Like if you told like a non-Jew to turn on the light, then it's if you turned on the light.
Okay, but what's a practical difference? Practical case where according to one reason it would be a problem, according to the other reason it wouldn't be a problem. Yeah? Not a question, just a practical difference, then we'll take questions after. Yeah? Correct. So if I give the instruction before Shabbos begins, meaning I have somebody who comes to my house and I say, tomorrow afternoon I want you to come to the house when it's Shabbos and I want you to do X, Y, and Z. So if the reason for Amir L'Nachri is because we're concerned that it's like an extension of my hand, it doesn't matter when I gave the instructions. If the person is doing the work on Shabbos, then it's as if I'm doing the work, and it doesn't matter if I instructed them on Shabbos or before Shabbos, it would be a problem either way. If you say the reason for Amir L'Nachri is because we don't want you talking about certain things on Shabbos, then if I gave the instruction before Shabbos began, it should seem to be that it wouldn't be a problem at all. And therefore, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that is why we need both of these reasons, because they cover different cases. Sometimes you have a case where you instruct the person before Shabbos began, and that would get around one of the problems, but it still gets you stuck in the other one. Or give an example in the opposite direction. If I give an instruction on Shabbos itself, and I tell the person, I want you to do the activity after Shabbos is over. After Shabbos is over, I want you to do X, Y, or Z. So, would that be prohibited or not? The answer is yes. Why? Not because it's an extension of my hand. After Shabbos is over, my hand is allowed to do malacha. The problem is, I'm talking about things on Shabbos that I'm not supposed to be talking about, and therefore that would be included in the prohibition of Amir L'Nachri. Okay, I see we have a bunch of questions, so let me take some questions. Yeah. Now the Rambam introduces us to reason number three. So again, so far we had two reasons. Reason number one was because Nasa Kishlucho, because it's as if it's an extension of my own hand, and just like I'm not allowed to do the malacha, so too I'm not allowed to have somebody else do the malacha for me. Reason number two that we gave is because the Dabar Davar, that there are certain things you're supposed to talk about on Shabbos and other things that should be off limits. Reason number three, the Rambam says, is because we are concerned, Shema Yavo Lasos Ba'atzmo. If you're going to have all these activities going on in your house, you're going to come to do it yourself. If we know that on Shabbos certain things are off limits and we know certain things are not done in our house at all, everybody's going to remember that this is not something we should be involved with. But when do mistakes happen? Mistakes happen when we see people around us doing things. And we forget, oh, it's Shabbos, we're not going to remember, we shouldn't be doing this, we should be doing that. And therefore, says the Rambam, his concern is that we have to be worried, Shema Yavo Lasos Ba'atzma. We have to be concerned if you're going to have a non-Jew doing all kinds of activities in your home on Shabbos, maybe that will lead you yourself, the Jew, to do malacha that you're not supposed to do either. So those are, so far, the three reasons. And Rav Moshe Feinstein writes a fourth reason, which the truth is, you find it in the Ritva. What Rav Moshe is dealing with is, how do we clearly define what is the problem with using electricity on Shabbos? Not using if it was left on. Using meaning turning on an electric circuit or doing something like that. How do you define what the prohibition is? So this is something that all of the great gedolim of the last 200 years are trying to struggle with to figure out exactly what the problem is. And Rav Moshe writes in the middle that it would be a zilzel Shabbos. Zilzel Shabbos is like the catch-all phrase. Basically, it's not in the spirit of Shabbos. Now says Rav Moshe, the same way they made a prohibition of Amir L'Nachri because of Zilzel Shabbos, so too, if Chazal were alive today, they would have said that creating an electric circuit would be something that would be also a Zilzel Shabbos. Zilzel Shabbos means it's a disgrace to Shabbos to be doing this or to be behaving in this way. And that is the way the Ritva explains what Amir L'Nachri is all about. It's Zilzel Shabbos because Nase HaShabbos Chol, says the Ritva. If you're going to have a non-Jew walking around your house and doing everything that they're not supposed to be doing, then you will not have any difference between Shabbos and weekday. I remember I was in someone's house and they had a cleaning lady, And that cleaning lady came. The minute the Shabbos meal was over, they came with a vacuum cleaner, vacuumed up the... Now, this wasn't my house, and I was not comfortable telling them what to do, but I was really uncomfortable being there. Because, number one, you're not allowed to have the vacuum going. Number two, you're not allowed to have the washing machine going. While all the guests were still there, the vacuum cleaner was going, the tablecloth had been taken off, sprayed, put into the washing machine. I mean, it's great. It's nice that after Shabbos is over, you don't have any headache, and you don't have anything to clean up, but it's absolutely prohibited. You're not allowed to do that, because that is Amira L'Nachri, even if you don't give them the instruction, but they're doing it because of you, they're doing it for you, that would be something that certainly would not be permissible. And one of the reasons for it not being permissible is because, the Ritva writes, it would make Shabbos like chol, make Shabbos feel like the weekday. And that would be a terrible zilzel to Shabbos, as Rav Moshe quotes over here, if you look in Amr Zion, that is his objection, that is his problem to having Amira L'Nachri performed on Shabbos. So again, we mentioned four different reasons. Whatever the reason is, the bottom line is we have a prohibition of Amira L'Nachri that we have to think about very, very carefully on Shabbos. Yes, question.
Yeah. So,
what you may not be aware of is usually when you hear about the prohibition of Amira L'Nachri, it's a discussion about asking a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos. However, what the Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia Daf Tzadi raises a possibility that maybe there's a prohibition of Amira L'Nachri Bishar Isurim as well. Maybe the same way I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do Malacha for me on Shabbos, so too, maybe I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do anything for me that I myself would not be allowed to do. So the Rama in Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat gives a very practical example, which is not practical for us, but I'm just using this as the first example to get to one that is much more prevalent. The Rama says, we have a prohibition, lo tachsom shor bedisho. What does that mean? Lo tachsom shor bedisho means when I am working my animal on the field, it is not fair to muzzle the animal and not allow the animal to graze as it's doing the work. The animal should be allowed to snack along the way. And therefore says the Pasuk that it would be a prohibition of an Isur de'oraisa if I would muzzle the animal while it is working on my field. Says the Rama, would I be allowed to ask a non-Jew to work my field with an animal and cover over the mouth of the animal? I'm not doing anything wrong. The non-Jew is doing it. It's not nice to the animal that while it's working, it's not going to be able to snack in the field along the way.
Right, so why would it be a malacha for the animal to give the animal snack?
No. Means if I have an animal working on my field, I, as a human being, am not allowed to muzzle the animal and prevent it from eating while it is working.
Ah, okay.
Now, what if I don't do it, but I instruct a non-Jew to do it? Says the Rama, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it because the same way I'm not allowed to, he's also not allowed to. This is not Shabbos. This is during the week. Right? Any day during the week, you're not allowed to do that, and you're not allowed to have a non-Jew do that either. Okay, now let's get to a much more common example that people are not aware of, but it comes up all the time. There's a prohibition. There's a prohibition of Sirus, which means... What is Sirus? Nobody knows what Sirus is. Isur d'oraisa. Castration. So there's a prohibition for a man to castrate. There's a prohibition for a woman to castrate. And there is a prohibition of Sirus HaBehema, which means to castrate an animal. All the same. All of those are mentioned in the Gemara as being part of the same overall prohibition of Sirus. Now, Sirus comes up. One place where it comes up in a lot of halachic literature today is if somebody wants to have an operation, if somebody wants to undergo treatment to have, someone's a transgender, right? So talk about these things. So in order to do so, you have to do something biologically to your body. So aside from all the other concerns that you need to think about, one needs to also consider whether or not the Torah would allow you to do that. So that's just putting that out there, just something to consider. Now, aside from that, Sirus is something that we take very seriously. Sirus is something that is not allowed. So let's say you have a woman who does not want to have children anymore. She's at a certain age where she's not interested in having any children, which is legitimate. It's fair to say that. But the question is, how do you go about doing that? Now, one way of doing it is just removing her uterus, having a hysterectomy. Is that allowed? So, of course, if God forbid a woman has a concern of cancer or some other reason, So then that would be allowed. There's no question about it. Of course you're allowed to do that. But if you're doing it just because, right, not because you have any health concerns, but just because, is that something that would be sanctioned or not? And that is why in our community we come up with other ways of getting around the concern of a woman becoming pregnant at a certain point. Now, it's something to think about as well, which is a big discussion. Birth control itself, is that considered to be serious? If one takes a birth control pill or a birth control hormone, isn't that also considered to be serious because I'm basically taking a functioning part of my body and I'm not allowing it to function any longer, correct? But I'm doing that without doing irreversible damage. Basically, I can get off the pill and then my body will regulate itself once again. And that is why many of the poskim say that for a woman to take a birth control pill would not be considered serious because you're not doing anything that is irreversible. All you're doing now is taking a pill. At any point, you can come off the pill and go back to the way things were before. And that is why many of the poskim in our community feel that that would be permissible. Either way, the Gemara says very clearly that siris habehema, that castrating an animal is something, neutering an animal is something that is certainly not permissible. It's considered to be an iser mideoraisa. So what happens? The Shulchan Aruch says in Eben Ezer, Aser lomar la'ovid kochavim l'saris behema shalanu. The same way that I am not allowed to castrate my own animal, I'm not allowed to neuter my own animal, so too, I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it either, because that would be amira l'nachri. How can I instruct a non-Jew to do something that I myself am not allowed to do? Now here's the problem. For people who are pet owners, we know that I've heard recently, where was I? I was just in Houston, Texas in January, and I made mention of this somewhere along the way. Forgot what I was talking about. And there was a guy in the crowd who told me that he is a vet. And I made mention in passing that most people who buy a dog and who want to have a dog in the house want to neuter the animal. And he said it's not true. He said the trend is totally shifting. And now it's considered to be animal cruelty and whatever it is. And basically the pendulum has swung in the other direction. He said now people who have dogs in the house are not neutering them as much as they used to. I don't know if it's because, I forgot what reason he said. But whatever it is, many people that I know who have dogs want to neuter the animal. It keeps the dog calmer. It saves the dog from certain potential cancers, correct? Certain things. So the question is, how do you go about neutering that dog? When the Mechaber, when the Shulchan Aruch writes explicitly that you would not be allowed to neuter it yourself, and you would also not be allowed to ask a non-Jew. That's the prohibition of Amir L'Nachri. That's the example that the Shulchan Aruch gives. Outside of Hilchos Shabbos, this applies Bishar Isurim as well. This applies with other prohibitions as well, that we would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it on our behalf if we ourselves would not be allowed to do it either. In fact, a number of years ago, I had a very fascinating shayla. If you look, I put it there as a separate entry, which you can read on your own. But basically, there was a woman. I was asked the following shayla. There was a woman who had a very rare condition of epilepsy. And it was a certain very unusual medical problem that she had. But in Israel, they came up with some workaround. Again, not a workaround medically, but a workaround that would help her. And the problem was that she loses her balance. Very often she loses her balance. So they had some kind of very specialized breed of a dog that knows how to train for this. And they have a special tension cord that the owner of the dog holds. And 18 months of training with the owner and the dog. And basically after 18 months of the dog learning every one of your motions and exactly how your body works, the dog knows to pull in a certain direction if it feels that you're falling this way or the other way. The dog will quickly run in the opposite direction and pull you back that you shouldn't fall down and hurt yourself. Something like it. I know I'm oversimplifying what it is, but that's basically what it is. So there was a woman who was already 10 months into the training, and she was not aware that the dog was not yet neutered. And then at some point, the trainer said to her, oh, you know, at some point, when we get closer to the 18 months and the dog's going to be living in your house and you're going to be full time with it, of course, you're going to have to neuter the dog. And she came and asked, what do I do? Now, that's a very intense shayla, because if you don't neuter the dog, what's she going to do? She spent tons of money on this dog and she needs it for her health, and that's very different. But the question is, what happens when I have a dog just for my own leisure, just for my own enjoyment? How do I go about neutering the dog when the Shulchan Aruch says, I'm not allowed to do it and I'm not allowed to have a non-Jew do it? This is a very, very complicated issue. And it's something that people are simply not aware of, but it's something that definitely needs to be thought about. But the bottom line is, what you see is that the Shulchan Aruch does say in many other Isurim, with regard to many other prohibitions, we would extend this issue of Amira l'Nachri, and we say it is not only limited to Hilchos Shabbos, it is something that branches out to many other areas of halacha as well. For example, Shulchan Aruch says as well, not only by Lo Sachsom Shar B'Disha, which means when your animal is grazing in the field, not only by Sirus, which means when I want to neuter an animal, but also the Shulchan Aruch says, let's say Malacha on Chol HaMoed. We know that there are certain activities you're not allowed to do on Chol HaMoed, other things which are permissible. So if I'm not allowed to do it, can I have a non-Jew do the Malacha for me? The answer says the Shulchan Aruch is no. Why? Because that would be a prohibition of Amir l'Nachri. The same way I'm not allowed to do it, I wouldn't be allowed to commission a non-Jew to do it for me either. So that is a very important point about the whole prohibition of Amir l'Nachri that we need to be aware of, that when we talk about this, it's not only limited to Hilchos Shabbos, it is something that goes far beyond Hilchos Shabbos, and something that we need to think about in other disciplines of our lives as well, that not only are we prohibited from doing certain things, but sometimes we have a prohibition for a non-Jew to do it for us as well. Now, as we mentioned, there are going to be exceptions to the rule. Even on Shabbos itself, there are going to be reasons why we would allow a non-Jew to do certain things. If you ask in a certain way, if the setup is a certain way, there are certain conditions which we will have to see in the next couple of shiurim. But this is just the general overview of what Amir l'Nachri is all about, what the origination of this takana, of this rabbinic decree, was for. And Amir Tashem, we will get into a little bit more of the details in the coming days.